being a leader is for me. It's about setting an example, operating with integrity, working to make the space around you better, making people feel excited to work with you, that when they leave your presence, they feel inspired, empowered, ready to take on challenges. They feel better for having interacted with you.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. This is Ben Baker, and welcome back, my wonderful audience. Thank you for coming back week after week. Come join us on LinkedIn. You can find me at Your Brand Marketing, or you can find me at the Podcast Host for Hire company page. I love hearing your comments. I love hearing, you know, what you guys think of past episodes, what you'd like to see, and what your thoughts are. So love having you guys along for the journey. This week, I've got Dr. Kelly Waltman, and we are going to talk about creating an effective feedback loop because she is amazing at doing this. So Kelly, welcome to the show, and let's get into this.
Wow. Well, thank you. I mean, that's an introduction there. I don't know if I quite hold myself to the same high standard that you've set for me, but I appreciate that compliment.
Well, I love putting my guests on a pedestal when they deserve it. So, you know, you and I have had lots of conversations off air. We had a great conversation a few minutes ago. And, you know, I love what you do. And I think that it's really an important thing because, you know, it's not just talking. It's about making sure that people are understood. And I think that that's a really important thing that a lot of people miss in communication. So before we get into this, let's let people have a little bit more of an insight about who you are. So where did you come from? What brought you here? You know, what's your PhD in? So we could all be, you know, very impressed by you. And then let's get into the conversation.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. So I live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I've lived in Pennsylvania my whole life, not this area, but I've been a Pennsylvanian my entire life. And yeah, it's been an interesting journey for me over the last 20 plus years. I have had the opportunity to have these variety of experiences. A lot of my career was actually in the juvenile and criminal justice fields. I've worked in local and state government. I've also been blessed to have one foot in academia for the last 15 years. So I like to use the term pracademic. I didn't come up with it, but I love it.
What a great phrase.
So I know, isn't that great? I love that term. So yeah, I've been this practitioner, this director, this leader. I've also loved teaching in higher education and doing research. And so I've had my foot in these two worlds for a long time and had these variety of experiences, like I said. And so it's been an interesting journey for me to work in these different environments. But the one thing that has just really been consistent for me all along and has really where I am now is just a new manifestation of all of that. I've always been an educator at heart, always. When I was, you know, I was in Future Teachers of America. I always wanted to be a teacher. I love training, teaching, educating. And I've been passionate about leadership for a long, long time. And I've been fortunate to be in different leadership roles and experience both great leadership and not so great leadership. And so, you know, when I decided to embark on this journey of founding SLR Leadership Consulting, it really was for me this new manifestation of all these experiences coming together. It's an opportunity for me to be an educator, but in a way that helps leaders and teams have better communication, work together more effectively, and really just have a better workplace culture and environment, because it really is such an important part of our daily lives and experiences.
I agree with you. I want to touch on one point that you just said, and you emphasized it, and I talk about it all the time. How do you define the difference between a great leader and a not so great leader? Because I think that that is pivotal to the conversation we're about to have, because people assume that they're great leaders. You know, people sit there and go, oh yeah, people love me, I'm a great leader. But when other people, you ask people that they lead the same question, you may not get the same response. So in your mind, first of all, how do you define what a leader is? And second of all, what creates a great leader and what creates a not so great leader?
Wow, those are some big questions. they're great questions, and that's fantastic. But yeah, those are some big, big concepts. And I think, you know, certainly there's the more traditional view of being a leader. You are in a leadership, quote unquote, position. So you've been given this role. You maybe have some decision-making authority. You are tasked with shepherding a group of people, you know, on whatever mission that you have within your organization. But certainly you can be a leader without being in a leadership role. You can help set the tone for that space and that environment. You can help, again, we talk about feedback. You can be somebody that helps set the tone for that type of dialogue and conversation. I have people ask me all the time, well, this is great, you know, cultivating a feedback loop, but what do I do if my boss isn't on board and how do I do this? And I always tell people, operate within your sphere of influence. You know, where you have some measure of control and influence, operate there. So you can be a leader and demonstrate leadership qualities without being in a leadership role per se. And I think that is what being a leader is for me. It's about setting an example, operating with integrity, working to make the space around you better, making people feel excited to work with you, that when they leave your presence, they feel inspired, empowered, ready to take on challenges. They feel better for having interacted with you. People who either really aren't leaders or who aren't great leaders, maybe they're in a leadership role, but they're not really great at it. I think you have that opposite feeling, you know, and so much of this is a feeling, you know, it's hard to objectively define what makes a great leader or a not so great leader. I mean, certainly there's toxic examples, people who are outright, you know, toxic, threatening, harassing, but there's a spectrum there. And so I think people who are not great leaders, when you walk away, you don't feel inspired. You don't feel clarity. You don't feel like you know where you should go. You don't feel empowered. It's, you know, and again, we could go into micromanaging, all these other pieces of not so great leaders. And I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole from your question, but I think so much of it is about the feeling you get, the energy that you receive from somebody when you walk away. How do you feel leaving that interaction? And that, I think, is where it really comes down to whether somebody is a great leader or not.
I agree. I mean, my point is that, and this is how I always put it, that leadership is an attitude, not a job title. Yes. And it's the people that wake up every morning and say, how do I make things better? Yes. How do I make other people better? How do I make the situation better? And the people that can communicate more effectively and be able to not only, you know, show what needs to be done, but be able to communicate in ways that inspire. Those are the great leaders. And, you know, you may not have a job title that says CEO or vice president or director or manager for that matter.
Right.
It's the people that actually sit there and step up and lead. Yeah. Those are the leaders, no matter what their title is.
Right.
So let's get into that in terms of what does that mean for creating an effective feedback loop? Because first of all, let's let you define that and then let's get into the conversation.
Sure. For me, an effective feedback loop, one of the ways I really like to describe it for people is actually cultivating a feedback culture. And so it really is about this willingness to give and receive feedback. And it's a conversation or a type of conversation that happens routinely. It's not something you do once in a while. It's not something that's relegated to performance reviews, but it really is woven into the fabric of that conversation, the dialogue that happens within a team, that they're regularly giving and receiving feedback. And they're doing so at the peer level. You know, if you and I are our coworkers, Ben, and or we are peers, you know, we can sit down after this conversation and you can say to me, okay, what went really well? What could be better? And I could do the same for you as your guest. What went well? What could I do better the next time I'm on a podcast? We can have that conversation. If I were your boss, you could have that conversation with me. And I could also ask you what I could do better. And so it really is this willingness at and between all levels within the organization and the team to give and receive feedback and have that open dialogue. and having a balance too of positive and critical feedback. You should give more positive than critical, but you know, often people are really good at or more comfortable with giving one type of feedback. Maybe they're really great at giving lots of praise and positive feedback, but they really get uncomfortable and struggle with giving some of that critical feedback. But some leaders are great at saying what should improve, and they forget sometimes to talk about, you know, what went well, what they should keep doing. And so it's about having that balance and having that just consistent rhythm and dialogue of routinely giving and receiving feedback in a healthy manner.
And I think that the thing that's missing is receiving that feedback.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people are great at giving feedback to say, by the way, you did this right, or you did this wrong, or I like this, I didn't like that, right, whatever. But there's very few leaders and there's very few people that like to hear what they've done wrong.
Yes.
And take it not only as a critical judgment, but as a way to improve.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of it comes down to, it's not what you say, but how you say it.
Right.
And I think that that's where I really want to explore is how do we enable people, whether it's a leader, you know, team environment, whether it's inter-team environment, whether it's, you know, a VP talking to the C-suite, whatever, to be able to create forms of communication and forms of feedback that not only is listened to, but resonates and is going to inspire and create change.
Yeah. So there's a couple different thoughts that come to mind when you ask that question. And first is, I just want to share with people, it's normal to have an uncomfortable response to receiving critical feedback. That's a normal reaction. That's our, thanks to our ancestors and millennia of hardwiring, that our survival instinct kicks in. You know, that's a normal response because there was, you know, millennia of time where our literal survival depended upon our standing in our tribe. And so when we hear critical feedback, that part of our brain kicks in and thinks, uh-oh, my standing in the tribe is threatened. So first, I like to just let people know it's normal to be uncomfortable with that. And it's, and once you realize that, I think it's like, okay, this is just my brain kicking in. And the other thing I like to tell people when it comes to receiving feedback more effectively is, because it's a normal reaction to be a little bit uncomfortable and it can sting, you know, even if somebody gives you feedback in a really effective way, it can still sting a little bit. And so to allow yourself the space to sit with that. So when somebody's giving you feedback, particularly critical feedback, taking the time to just listen, acknowledge it, but then give yourself some time and space to process it. Resist that urge to jump in right away with justifications, clarifications, what you don't understand. Just receive the feedback, thank them for coming to you with that information, and say, I'd like some time to process. Is it okay if we circle back in a day or so? I respect you coming to me. I'd like some time to process that feedback. And that gives you some space to feel the feelings, know that they're okay. And then really take some time to genuinely process it and be objective about it, even if you don't agree with it, you know. And then there are times that people might come to us with feedback that we really genuinely don't agree with, but there's often some kernel of truth in there. There's some way that we can see it from their perspective. And so taking the time and the space to process that and finding it can be really helpful and really valuable. So that's the one big thing I like to tell people when it comes to receiving feedback is, know that it's normal, give yourself that space, process it objectively, and then circle back after you've had some time to process. But the key piece is making sure that people are actually giving feedback effectively, because a lot of people think they're great at giving feedback, but maybe they're really not. And there are some key elements that need to be there. You know, the first is having a safe space for that dialogue. If you don't have that psychological safety, if you haven't cultivated a relationship where that type of exchange can be given in a healthy way, then that's going to be really difficult, almost impossible to either give or receive feedback effectively. And, you know, timing is important too. If we wait way too long, if we wait 2 to 3 weeks to give somebody feedback, we've diluted our message. It's not as meaningful. And we also need to make sure that it's objective. Again, it is, I'm coming to you from my perspective. This is what I perceived. Or maybe there's an objective behavior that somebody's consistently responding to emails after 10 days instead of 2. And you want to make it about that objective behavior. It's not a value judgment of the person. It's not an opinion-based statement. Don't call them lazy. I've heard that, not about me, but I've heard people say that, you know, don't make it a value-based judgment and be really specific. Again, really target something objective about the behavior that's being demonstrated and be very specific. Don't just give vague feedback like you're late all the time. Well, what does that really mean? Let's be more specific. And I think when those elements are there, you're able to give feedback more effectively. And then it helps you also to receive it. If people are meeting those components, it still might be uncomfortable, but you can receive it more effectively.
And, you know, I want to touch on a couple of things. The first thing being timeliness, because the days, in my opinion, and you tell me wrong, is the annual report is dead, or, you know, the annual review should be dead. You know, the fact that you write down all this information, you put it in a file, and then once a year, you sit down with this person and you let them have everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, right, of what's going on for the last year. There is no way for people to go back and fix things.
No.
There's right. absolutely no way for people to go back and, first of all, take it objectively, learn from it, mm-hmm. and be able to fix things that happened 9 months ago.
Right.
So I love the fact that you talk about doing things in a timely manner, because you know, we can't fix what we don't know. If all of a sudden you expected me to, you know, return emails in 24 hours, I thought I was supposed to, you know, 48 hours was fine, and you don't tell me and it keeps festering, the right. problem gets worse.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it gets worse both in terms of, yeah, for me, I'm unaware of the issue that I'm not meeting expectations. And so you're frustrated. And oftentimes if there's a behavior like that's occurring, other people in the team might be aware that somebody's not meeting expectations and they're getting frustrated. Well, why is this person not meeting expectations, but I'm doing my job, and why isn't that changing? And often those behaviors aren't happening in a vacuum. A lot of times other team members are aware of what's going on, and they're getting frustrated. So that it's this ripple effect that occurs when you fail to give people, when you fail to give, have those feedback conversations. Absolutely.
You use the term expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is extremely important, having accountability and expectations. And I don't think you can have one without the other. So how do you go about setting up effective expectations in order to be able to have accountability? Because I think that conversation is going to lead into today and hybrid work environments and everything that goes with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Certain expectations are likely going to be spelled out in either policy or job descriptions. There's certain things that if it's company policy that, except for extreme circumstances, emails are responded to within 24 hours or at least an acknowledgement email, well, that's a pretty clear expectation as long as it's been communicated. There are other times that though that there might be something that's position or person specific, but you need to make sure no matter what, that they're clearly communicated. And I think that's really at the heart of what you're getting at, is that expectations need to be clearly defined and clearly communicated. You can't be, or you shouldn't be, frustrated with somebody for not meeting expectations if they've never been defined. And I've been in work environments like that. I've seen that happen where, you know, managers are frustrated because somebody's not meeting a deadline, but the person didn't know that was a deadline, or, you know, other things are happening and they're not, it's not been clearly communicated. And so that really is at the heart of it. You're absolutely right. If you're not clearly defining what the expectations are, and especially, yes, if you're in a hybrid environment and you have, or a fully remote environment, and you have not communicated to your team members exactly what the expectations are for how their workday will look, you know, maybe in your mind, you're thinking they're going to be sitting at their computer logged in from 8 to 4:30 every day. But in their mind, they're thinking, well, I work remotely. I can work really whenever throughout the day. I can log on at 9 if I want, as long as I get my work done, put my time in, I can work whenever. Well, if you've never had that conversation, you can't really be upset with them for taking a more flexible approach. I mean, we could say that it's also on the employee to have that conversation with their supervisor. It's not just a one-way street.
I think it has to go both ways. I think there has to be expectations of leaders, of the people that they lead, and also of the people that are being led, of the leadership, because sometimes you need that leader to be available. Sometimes you need that leader to do things for you, or to be, you know, or be a champion of a cause. And if those expectations aren't being met, maybe that those things will just never happen.
Right. Yeah. And that's where, again, being able to have that dialogue is so important, because then the way, if you didn't have that conversation up front for whatever reason, there was, you know, a lapse in communication, and now you're realizing that your team member is doing this other work schedule, how you approach that conversation is so critical. It's so important, you know, being able to sit down with them and have that conversation and say, okay, I think there was some miscommunication here, misunderstanding. Let's talk through, you know, what your expectations were for this work setup. Let's talk through what mine or the company's expectations are. Maybe there needs to be some flexibility, or maybe there just was that need to have that conversation up front. But being able to approach that in a healthy way from both, again, like we said, the team member and the leader, that's the critical piece. And that's where, again, if you've been able to cultivate that type of dialogue all along, those conversations are going to be a lot easier to have and a lot more comfortable than if you haven't facilitated that type of dialogue leading up to any point where you have some type of big change or crisis or major deadline, or that's when you really see, you know, how things have been up until that point are really accentuated when you reach times of crisis or, you know, some type of emergency.
So let's take this from the theoretical to the practical. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll use myself as an example. I'm starting a brand new program. It's coming out. It's called the Communicate Your Why Podcast Network. We're going to have podcast hosts that are going to interview people within verticals, a series of podcasts across North America, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, Caribbean, et cetera. So I've got a workforce that is literally almost worldwide. What I'm doing is I'm bringing these people together for a one-hour meeting next week to be able to set expectations. Mm. And realistically, because of time zones, not everybody's going to be able to make it.
Sure.
What we're going to do is we're going to record it. We're going to go through best practices. We're going to go through ideas and be able to generate and have all that information go out to everybody and then get a feedback loop from everybody afterwards.
Right.
Am I doing this the right way, or is there a better way when you're having an initial meeting and you have this diversified workforce and you're trying to get the best information out to people, bring everybody in the best team? Is this a logical way of doing this, or is there a better way to handle the situation?
I think that what you're doing is a great way to handle that situation. Anytime you can use what you have to facilitate live conversation and understanding that some people may have to catch the replay later, but having it as an actual conversation and dialogue is fantastic. You know, anybody who's able to attend. And I love that you mentioned in there that you're going to engage those people in the dialogue about setting the expectations. It's not just you coming in. I mean, I'm sure you're coming into this conversation with some expectations of your own, as you should, but it's not just you coming in and saying, these are the expectations, this is how it's going to be. It's, we're going to talk about and have a dialogue about expectations for how this can work the most effectively and efficiently for everyone. And I would encourage you to get their expectations first. Mm-hmm. You should come to the table with your own, but I would encourage you to open it up for theirs first, because they might say exactly what you wanted to say. And then you can, if you want to reveal what you had, you can, just to reiterate, but you know, it's great to let other people to bring their suggestions first. And then, yeah, sending that out and getting feedback from those who couldn't attend, and or maybe people who didn't feel comfortable speaking up at the time, or maybe needed some more time to process. Not everybody can just jump in right away. And so giving them the space also to process that information and then come back with feedback, I think is fantastic. It really is. You're doing a good job with allowing all of those forms of comfort level, accessibility, availability to come to the proverbial table and be a part of that dialogue and that expectation setting. And I think that that's great.
So would you suggest not only a team meeting, but if people have concerns or questions or whatever, making it available for them to have a one-on-one conversation at the same, you know, at a later date?
Yeah, I think that that's great. Certainly depending on the size of an organization. I mean, I know you're talking
about. Of course. I mean, we're talking 12 to 14 people. It's manageable. It's not 5,000. It's not 10,000. It's not 100,000. obviously, the challenges would be different based on those those situations.
Yes. Yeah. So I think absolutely, if there are things that people want to talk about and they would like to have that conversation with you one-on-one, I think offering that invitation is a great idea. Because again, some people are more comfortable in that format. And they might want to give some more context. Mm-hmm. So one thing that it's great to offer up discussion boards or email messaging or other ways to give written feedback. Some people would rather have a dialogue and give you some more context and nuance and tone that you can't get through written communication. So I think that's a great idea and suggestion. Again, certainly as teams get larger and larger, you need to think about who could be that person for that one-on-one conversation. I think that that's still a valuable component and absolutely worth having that. It just then depends on who that person would be. When I was doing research for the book, one of the gentlemen I spoke with during my qualitative interviews used this term that I love so much. He called it the delegation of nurturing. And so as a company grows and grows, you know, in the very beginning, if you are, you know, a small business owner, entrepreneur, as you're growing your team, you can do all of that nurturing, right? You can be the person to do that. But as it continues to grow, you need to delegate that nurturing to your other people and your other leaders and to team members to do it for one another. So I think that I just love that concept and that quote. And I think that that's something that as this continues to grow for you and it reaches more and more people, that's something that you could do.
I love it. It's enabling myself to build champions for them to build champions within the organization. And I think that that's a great way for organizations to grow, maintain the culture, maintain the purpose, and maintain the brand story.
Yeah.
So let's talk about diversified workforces and as they grow, because you're right. If it's a team of 5, 6, 10 people, yeah, there's challenges, but the challenges are not that difficult in terms of communication, setting expectations, meeting a one-on-one. It's doable. Mm-hmm. But as the teams get larger and all of a sudden you have teams in 32 states, in 15 different countries, in 12 different time zones, how do you create an effective feedback loop to be able to allow people to make sure that they're listened to, understood, and valued?
Yeah. So one of the first things that popped into my mind when you were asking that was that being very intentional. I like the word intention, being intentional. I think that that is really at the heart of everything we're talking about. You know, as a leader, you need to be intentional about asking for feedback. Your people may not always feel comfortable coming to you. So being intentional about asking for feedback, in addition to, as we talked about, giving feedback. And I think you really need to be intentional about the messaging and that you continue to cultivate this feedback culture, but also the messaging with the leaders as you grow. One of the other people that I spoke with talked about being like the guardian of the culture. And I loved that as well. This idea that you're not losing sight of the culture that you started from the very beginning, and you are working with your leaders to continue to cultivate that. And so, you know, some CEOs are very large corporations still maintain this open door policy that anybody can come to them, that they can, you know, that's not realistic for everyone. So as long as there though is maybe periodically once a year or at some capacity, you can hear from everyone, or you've really worked to have that funnel of communication from the line level workers to their managers and up through, as long as each person is continuing to work on cultivating that feedback culture, that's really going to help. One of the things too that I was thinking when you posed this question was, I encourage leaders and teams, and I go through this exercise with clients on having a leadership philosophy. So many companies have a customer service philosophy. They have a set expectation or policy or philosophy for how all customers should be treated. So even though each customer, when they come into a business or maybe they call customer service, each employee is going to bring their own personality to that interaction. You're going to have somewhat of a unique experience based upon the employee you engage with, but the overall experience, the expectation that the quality of your experience would be the same no matter which employee you interact with, most companies have that. But what you don't see often is that companies have a leadership philosophy, a set philosophy expectation for how all employees should be treated. And so often it ends up being that depending on which supervisor you happen to be assigned to, your experience can be drastically different. If you're assigned to Johnny, he might be great. He's a great listener. He gives great feedback. He receives feedback. But if you're assigned to, you know, Susie, and sorry for all the Johnny and Susies out there, if you're assigned to Susie, At least I didn't say Karen.
Ben. You can call the bad leader Ben. You know, we'll just put it on my shoulders.
Yeah. You know, you happen to be assigned to somebody else and they micromanage, they're never around, they're not accessible. And so your experience with that employer is going to be vastly different simply because of the supervisor you're assigned to. So I really work with leaders and teams on leaders and small business owners having a leadership philosophy, a set expectation of how all employees should be treated. What are your non-negotiables? How are you going to celebrate the wins? What does that open dialogue look like for you? What are your channels for communication? But really understanding that, yes, each supervisor is going to bring their personality to the table. And of course, there's going to be room for you to be your own person there, but that each employee can expect that their quality of experience in working with that organization is going to be the same. And that becomes especially important as companies grow. It's important even if you have a small company, but as companies grow, having that unified leadership philosophy, ensuring that you are training your leaders to understand that philosophy and live it out, and that you are, as managers, you know, living that example and setting that example, that's huge.
I think that's so important. I've got two questions and I'm going to let you go because there's so much we could talk about and we could talk about this forever, but I think that we got to start bringing this thing down for a landing. The first question is if you could give leaders one piece of advice of how to create an effective feedback loop, is there one tip or trick or tool that you would give every single person you talk to that says, here's one thing to try before you try anything else?
Yeah, I would say ask for feedback. And I give leaders a list of questions that I call gateway questions. If they really haven't had that type of conversation before, they haven't asked for feedback before, it can, one, be, again, very difficult for them to receive it effectively. And that's, it's important that if you're going to ask for it, that you receive it effectively. So understanding it can be tricky to receive it if you're not used to hearing that from people. It can also be uncomfortable for others. If you've never asked for feedback before, they might think, okay, what's going on? And so,
what's the hidden agenda? Why are they doing this now?
Yes. Yeah. So I provide leaders with a list of questions that can be really helpful that can set the tone to start to receive that feedback, but in a non-threatening way for both parties. So questions like, and I encourage them to give people these questions in advance if they can. So it gives people time to think about it. You know, what are you getting from me that you find helpful? What aren't you getting from me? Aren't you getting from me that would help you be more successful? What is something that I could do for you to help you with your professional growth? So asking those types of questions can be really helpful to, again, you're setting the tone that you really are willing to receive feedback and you're going to receive it in an effective way. And it lets people know that it is safe to come to you. And so if you're asking questions like, you know, what could our team get from me that could help them be more successful? Or what am I doing that is, you know, making your jobs easier? If you're asking questions in that kind of tone, people generally can answer that. If you just say, what could I do better? People aren't going to really answer that. So I would say, start with you. Start by asking for feedback and asking for feedback in an effective way, in a non-threatening way. Receive it effectively. And then, you know, start to give feedback as well. But I think it helps to start by being willing to receive it.
I love it. What's the best way people can get in touch with you, Kelly?
Well, in all things social, it's at Dr. Kelly Waltman, Dr. Kelly Waltman. And they can also check out the company website, SLR Leadership Consulting. Those are probably the best ways.
Awesome. I'll make sure that all that information is in the show notes so people can get at it. But here's the one question I ask everybody as I let them go out the door. When you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
That they feel better for having engaged with me, that I left them feeling like I was a positive presence in their day, and I left them feeling good about themselves, and I left them feeling better about having been in my company.
Well, I want to thank you for the masterclass you provided. You know, you made my life better. You made the life of my audience better. And thank you for giving some real practical tips that are going to hopefully help people, you know, create an effective feedback loop.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Had a great time.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?